morning, everybody. I want to welcome you here. I want to welcome you to our Ball Road campus across town. Hope you guys are having a great morning. My name is Rodney, if I've never had a chance to meet you, and we are in part two of a series we started last week called Each One, Reach One, where we're looking at the reality that all of us have an opportunity, all of us have the potential to make a huge difference with the people in your lives where you are, and it starts with just one, that you don't have to reach the whole entire world, you just have to reach one person at a time. That's really the model that Jesus followed. And so if you missed last week, go back and check that out, and you can get caught up. But today we're going to look at the one tool that makes you the most powerful, the thing that you can use no matter how much Bible knowledge you have, no matter how bad you think your past is, no matter what you think it is that makes it effective or ineffective, you have something at your disposal that God has given you or that God will give you that'll make you able to reach the one person in your life that God is maybe calling you to at this point in time to reach. And to help you think about that, I want you to think about the most amazing story that you have ever heard. I want you to think about whether it was a story that somebody told you when you were younger in your family. It's a story of your favorite movie, but I bet you there is a story that you love to tell people. In fact, think about your family history. Is there a story from your childhood or a story from your family that you find yourself telling people and you find yourself repeating? Because everybody loves a good story. In our family, my kids love to hear the stories of when we were younger. Just a couple weeks ago, my mom was telling me that she has a new boyfriend, which is weird when your 70-year-old mother has a boyfriend, okay? But my mom has this boyfriend, and so she sent a picture of her and her 75-year-old boyfriend, and to each their own. And I showed it to my daughter, and my daughter said, "Oh, Grandma looks so pretty." And she's like, "Oh, she look at her. She's got her hair done. She's got her makeup on, and like she's really going out for this for the boyfriend, right?" And I said, "Well, let me go find a picture." So I remembered I had this picture of my mom's wedding in 1980, and I go down into the basement, I dig it out, and I bring it up, and I show her, and my daughter could not believe that that was Grandma. You know, that was, what, 46 years ago? And she said, "I can't believe that's Grandma." So I had to tell all the stories of what was Grandma like? What was Grandpa like? What was your dad like? And all these stories had to come resurfacing because everybody loves a good story. And here's the thing about a story. Is I could have told my daughter anything and she was going to believe it because it was my story. Like, here's where we lived at this point in time when I showed her this picture. Here's where I was born. Here's what it was like when I was younger. Here's what they were like, because it was my story, my recollection. It was me telling her, "This is also your family history." They love hearing those stories. Our kids love to hear the stories of when we were married, of when my wife and I got married, and what it was like on the day that they were born, and the day we brought them home from the hospital, and they love that story. Well, I want you to know something. What we're going to see today is that story that you have to tell is really all that it takes for you to make a difference in the life of just one person. In fact, we're going to say it this way. It is that my story is powerful with my one. You have a story to tell, but it's not going to be the story of your 70-year-old mom having a boyfriend. It's not going to be the story of a wedding 46 years ago. It's not going to be the story of what it was like the day your child was born or you brought them home from the hospital. It's going to be the story of what God has done in your life, how you came to know and to follow Jesus, and the difference it's made in your life. So just real quick before we dive into that, though, I want to remind you of the four things we talked about last week. That as you identify your one, who is one person in your life who is far from God. Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a coworker, it's somebody at school, it's a neighbor, it's somebody that's in your family. But you thought about one person, God revealed one person to you that they don't know Jesus, or they're out of walk with Jesus, they're not in relationship with him at this point in time. And that could very well be your mission field. What do we do? If you missed last week, here's what we talked about, these four simple steps. We're going to pray daily. None of this works. Nothing happens without prayer. It's not on our own accord, but we got to be praying for these folks. We got to be praying for God to reveal, is this the one? Sometimes you'll be praying for your one, and it'll be obvious that, okay, it's time for me to pray for another person. There's time for me to pray for several ones. But whatever it is, we're going to start with pray daily. Number two, we got to earn trust. Too often what Christians, we talked about this last week, what Christians do is they jump right into, let me tell you about Jesus. It's like the cold calls, people trying to sell you car insurance on the phone, or it's like somebody trying to buy your property. And it's like, no, the first thing you got to do is you got to earn trust. What can I do to serve this person? What can I do to take care of one of their needs? What can I do to care for them? I want to earn trust. We see Jesus do that all throughout the New Testament. He heals somebody and then he introduces them to truth. He feeds the 5,000, then he introduces them to truth. The third thing is then we share my story. What is the story of before Jesus, Jesus after Jesus that you can share? And then finally, we're going to invite them to Jesus, invite them to come experience Jesus in worship, invite them to come follow Jesus with their lives. But that's the four steps. So today we're going to focus mostly on this third one. Next week we'll finish up as we head into Easter with the fourth one. So here's the story we're going to look at to help us do that. If you have a Bible, open to John chapter 9, and we're going to kind of hopscotch through this passage and look at several different verses. But this is a story of Jesus. He's in the middle of his ministry. He's walking through the towns and the communities, and he's meeting needs. He's seeing needs. He's healing people. He's teaching. He's doing all the things. And we get to John chapter 9, verse 1. It says this: as he went along, he, I need everybody to say this word right here, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now, it's interesting what Jesus would go on to answer that is to say, well, y'all are being a little bit like into karma here. Like, you know, this must be some, he's getting repaid for something bad. And that's just not how God works. He says, in fact, this happened so that you are about to see the glory of God revealed. That's how Jesus would answer. All right. Now, here's what I want us to focus on for the sake of what you have to take from this today. If you are going to reach one person, if every person in here reaches just one person, here's what you have to know, is you have a story. Now, what we see here, you're like, now how do you get that out of this verse? Well, as Jesus walks along, what's the first thing that he does? He notices somebody in need. We can take this two directions this morning. He saw the man that was blind. Listen, Jesus was very busy, right? I mean, Jesus had a lot going on. He's getting ready to prepare his disciples for Jesus to go to a cross and to die and to raise again, and for the whole ministry to get started and the movement to get going, for Easter to happen. But yet Jesus takes time to see a need as he goes along. It tells us two things. Number one, this is how we should be if we're going to be like Jesus. Do you go throughout your day, even with the antenna up, to be on the lookout for, God, how can you use me today? Lord, I want to be looking for people who need you. Lord, I want to be looking for people who have a need that I can meet. I want to look for somebody who's sitting alone at the lunch table. I want to look for the neighbor who seems like that I could just, first of all, introduce myself, get to know them. They seem lonely. I could help them out. I want to look for the family member who has the need. I want to meet the need. Are we even seeing the needs around us? That's the first thing. But the second thing I want you to know is in this story, if you follow Jesus, or if you want to follow Jesus, or if you're pursuing Jesus, or maybe one day will follow Jesus, we are the man born blind. We are all the one that Jesus saw. He saw us in our needs, and he met that need. He saw through the lens of history, through the lens of the future, through everything. He said, I know that Rodney is going to be far from me. He's going to go through this life living a blind life. I'm going to intervene. He knew the same for you. We could easily take this verse and we could say, as Jesus went along, he saw Rodney. You could put your name in there. As Jesus went along, he saw fill in the blank. And what this tells us is that every single one of us have a story to tell. Look at this next point here. We all have a story of what one did for me. So you're going to hear this morning the story of what Jesus did for the man born blind. But what I want you to know is you have a story of what one did for you. I have a story of what one did for me. Every single one of us have a story that can be told. You're about to see what the man born blind story was, and a simple, easy, I would even say formula for how you can tell your story too. So here's what Jesus does. He tells the disciples, no, this happened so that God will get the glory from it. And he does the weirdest thing ever. He spits on the dirt, mixes it into mud, puts it on the man's eyes, and the man can see. We get fast forward now to verse 8 and listen to how this happens. His neighbors and others who knew him. This goes back to what we talked about last week, that the second step after you start praying for the one person in your life that you're going to really just ask God to reach on your behalf, The second thing is to build trust. Why? Because the people that you build trust with, the people you have relationship with, that's who's going to notice the change in your life. That's who's going to notice the difference in your life. In this man's case, it was his neighbors. It was the others who knew him. He was not trying to reach complete and total strangers. He wasn't going door to door and knocking on people's houses and saying, hey, Jesus healed me and now I can see. It was his neighbors and others who knew him. My question for you, very quickly, my question for you, Knox or Ball Road, is this. What would your neighbors and people who know you say about you? That's a really scary question, isn't it? I think for some of us, our neighbors wouldn't even know us. So maybe step two for you is to invite a neighbor over for dinner. You're gonna start praying for them. You're gonna invite them to dinner. You're gonna invite them to breakfast. You're gonna take care of their, you're gonna bring their papers. Does anybody get newspapers anymore? I remember back when I was a kid, the nice thing you did, you took the paper to their porch, right? You're gonna do something for them. You're gonna build their trust. I need to get to know my neighbors. And there might be people, do you know anyone or does anyone know you who's far from God? Some of us get in our Christian bubble and we only hang out with church people. We only go to church. We only do the Christian thing. And yet Jesus didn't do that. He had, the man born blind didn't do that. It was his neighbors and others who knew him who saw the difference, who saw what Jesus had done. Who are your neighbors and others who know you that see what Jesus is doing in your life? For him, it was his neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar, and they asked each other, isn't this the man who used to sit and beg? Some said he was, and others said, no, he just looks like him. But the beggar kept saying, yes, I am the same one. Now notice what the beggar doesn't do here. He doesn't try to convince them of the science behind Jesus' healings. He doesn't try to convince them of who Jesus is. He doesn't try to convince them of anything. All he says is, yes, I am that person. And what you're going to see is he would begin to unfold this very simple story. And the simple story is important because of this point here. I want you to write this down. A simple story is a powerful story. And over again, this man born blind, I wish he had a name, but we don't know what it is. He tells his story in three simple parts. You're gonna see over and over, he first simply says, I was blind. Yep, that was me. And then I met Jesus, and now I can see. That's all he says over and over. He doesn't launch into a dissertation. It doesn't take 10 pages. It's not a really long email. It's not a 30-minute conversation. Over and over and over and over, all this man says is, I was blind, I met Jesus, now I can see. You're gonna see they're gonna ask him questions. Well, that's not good enough. We need to know the facts. We need to know the history. We need to know all the other details. And over, all this man is gonna say is, I was blind, I met Jesus, now I can see. This is the simple story that you and I have to share. It's, hey, before Jesus, I was, fill in the blank. I met Jesus when... What fills in the blank there? And now, ever since I've been following Jesus, I am, and fill in the blank. It's really simple. It's the simple story that makes for a powerful story. Too often you think you gotta have a 30-minute story, you gotta have all the Bible knowledge, you gotta have all the answers, you gotta have all the apologetics, and yet Jesus says, or the blind shows us, no, all I know about Jesus is this. I was blind, and then I met him, and now I can see. So that's what he tells them. He tells his neighbors, he tells his friends, yep, I'm the same one. I was blind, I met Jesus, now I can see. But that's not good enough for them. Look at what happens next in verse 9. Then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees. Because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him, the Pharisees asked the man all about it. So they said, wait a second, well, that's great that you were blind, you met Jesus, now you can see, but here's the problem. He healed you on the Sabbath, so it broke all of our rules. That's not good enough. We gotta take you to the religious people and make sure this is okay. Now, here's what's interesting to me, is nobody is celebrating with the man that he's healed. Can you imagine you've been blind your entire life and somebody heals you, Jesus heals you, and the first thing people say is, I don't believe it. I don't think it could be that way. Nobody has yet in this story gotten excited for the man. What's it like? What do colors look like? Did you think trees looked like that? Is blue what you thought blue was? Is green what you thought green was? Is it this not the most amazing thing ever that you can now see? None of that is happening. All they're worried about is this doesn't check the boxes of our religion. So they take him to the religious people. We skip ahead a verse and look what they say. The Pharisees again questioned the man who had been blind, and they demanded, "What's your opinion about this man who healed you?" And the man replied, and this is a really important word. I need both of our campuses to say it. The man replied, "I think he must be a prophet." Now, do you notice something here? He's not totally sure. In other words, he doesn't have all the answers. He says, "I'm not really sure about this man. All I know is that I was blind. I met Jesus. Now I can see. I don't have it all figured out yet. I don't have it all. I don't have all the answers." What if you were to take the same approach? I think the reason a lot of us are afraid to live on mission, we don't tell our story, we don't invite people to come experience Jesus, we don't have spiritual conversations when the opportunity presents themselves at home and at work and in the neighborhoods and wherever it is that you go, is because we think we have to have all the answers. Well, I want you to write this down and let's just reverse that. I don't have to have all the answers. This man, all he needed to be able to say to them was all that you and I need to be able to say. I was blind. I met Jesus, now I can see. It's that simple. Over and over, that would be his response. Over and over, he would simply tell people, "I don't have all the answers. I think he must be a prophet. How did he do it on the Sabbath? I don't know. Did it break some rule that he did on the Sabbath? Well, I wouldn't think so, because a man who can spit in dirt and turn it into mud and put it on my eyes and make me go from blind to see must be something." He says, "I don't know the answers though." And what if you and I were willing to take that approach? I think some of the most powerful words that you can say to somebody when you're having a spiritual conversation, you're talking about, you know, you've invited them, you've shared your story, you've told them about Jesus, and they begin to ask questions of you. If you don't know, it's simply easy enough to say, or maybe even best enough to say, "I don't know all the answers. All I know is my story." Or maybe this, "Hey, I don't know all the answers, but why don't we find out together? I mean, I'm happy to go through the Bible with you, but don't try to answer." Here's the worst thing you can say is, what I think is. No, no, no. You, what you believe and what you think doesn't matter. All that matters is what God's word said. And if you don't know what is true, it's okay to say, "I don't know." I say it all the time. Traveling around as much as I have to do now, I'm on airplanes, I'll get in conversations with people I've never met, never going to see again. And when something comes up, usually they say, "Well, what do you do for a living?" And once I tell them, it's something's gonna happen. One of two things happen. Either the conversation shuts down, they don't speak another word to me, all right, which is I get it, or it turns into like a therapy session. And when it turns into a therapy session, it ends up with people asking questions like, "Well, do you think there were dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden?" Or anything from that all the way up to like, "Well, hey, what happens to the Aborigine that lives on an island and never hears about Jesus? And what do you think happens to them?" And I mean, crazy questions and crazy conversations. And I have found one of the most powerful things that you can say is, "I don't know. I'm not certain. All I know is this. Before Jesus, I was fill in the blank. And then I met Jesus. I met Jesus when? Fill in the blank. And now, ever since following Jesus, this is who I am now." I don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have all the answers. Now, let me tell you who that's going to frustrate. It's only going to frustrate religious people. Religious people like for things to be black or white. Religious people like for things to be in their boxes and be in their containers and be in their compartments. But listen, you'll see that in the story. Maybe that's okay. Maybe the religious people need to be challenged to identify their own story. Because in verse 18, that's exactly what happens. The Jewish leaders still refused to believe. They still refused. Nobody's celebrating for the guy. Nobody's happy for the guy. They still refused to believe that the man had been blind and could now see. So now they call in his parents. A grown man, they call on his parents. Now, for time's sake, we're going to skip through the next few verses. But basically, his parents throw him under the bus. They basically say, "He's a grown man. He can answer for himself." They were afraid of the religious people. They were afraid of these leaders. So we get to verse 24. "So for the second time, they call in the man who had been blind and told him, 'God should get the glory for this, because we know this man, Jesus, is a sinner.'" Now listen, all this blind man now who can see is saying over and over and over is, I was blind, I met Jesus, now I see. I was blind, I met Jesus, now I see. I was blind, I met Jesus, now I can see. And now they're challenging who Jesus even is. He's already told them, I don't really know who he was. I think he must be a prophet, but I want you to see something he doesn't do. He doesn't try to convince them. Go to the slide. My job is to tell the story. It is not to convince. That's what I think holds a lot of us back from trying to live on mission, is we think I've got to be able to convince someone to follow Jesus. I've got to be able to convince someone they should come to church with me. That's not your job. You're not the Holy Spirit. Your job is simply to tell the story. This man's job in the story we're seeing today was not to convince anybody of anything. His job was simply to tell the story. If they continue to refuse to believe, that's on them. And now you're going to see those three words come out of the blind man's mouth. Well, he's formerly blind. He's not blind anymore. He's going to say these three words that I think are so important for us to be willing to say. He says this, I don't know. I don't know whether he is a sinner, this man replied, but I know this, and here it is. I was blind. Kind of have to infer, I then met this man Jesus. Y'all are calling a sinner you don't like. You got mad because he did it on the Sabbath, whatever the case might be. I was blind. I met Jesus, and now I can see. Your job and mine is to do exactly what he just did. Simply stick to the story. That's it. I had a man one time tell me, I've told you this story before. Our church was new, and I was a lot younger. And when we were brand new as a church, so there were all kinds of people, saw a 26, 27-year-old pastor, and they thought, you know, I need to help this young man. And we needed a lot of help. Now, don't get me wrong. But we got all these people that would show up, and here's what usually happened. The conversation in the lobby would be, I'd get their spiritual resume, their spiritual pedigree. And so there was this older guy, he was telling me about all the churches he'd been a deacon at, he'd been an elder at, and all the classes he had taken, and all the conferences he had been to, and I'm sure he's great. But I didn't care about any of that. You know what I cared about? I wanted to know his story. Because intellectual knowledge, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, the demons believe in Jesus. Satan knows a lot about the Bible, right? Like information is not the answer. So I wasn't too interested in his credentials. What I wanted to know, I wanted to know his story. And I said, well, hey, I'd love to get together with you sometime because I'd love to hear your story. And he said, oh, it's a story every man needs to hear. And I thought, uh-oh, red flag. When we're proud of our story as if I'm the center of the story, it's not going to be a good story. Jesus has to be the story. For the man born blind, it was simple. I was blind. I met Jesus. Now I can see. That was the story of Jesus. So just stick to the story. Just stick to the story of before Jesus, I was, fill in the blank. I met Jesus when, and what is it that you would fill in the rest of that story with? And now that I follow Jesus, I am, fill in the blank. Let me tell you how else this works. Maybe it's not just a story of you following Jesus. But if you've been a Christ follower for any length of time, you go through this process. The Bible talks about it we would call it progressive sanctification. I'm working out my salvation with fear and trembling. So here's what I want you to think about. There are situations I know for me where I take my eyes off Jesus in my marriage. I take my eyes off Jesus in my finances. I'm doing it my way. I become the Lord of my marriage. I become the Lord of my family. I become the Lord of how I spend my money. And it changes things. And so I have story after story that I can apply this to. If you know, there was a time in my life when I wasn't doing my finances the way that God's word tells me to, the way that Jesus would want me to. But then I began to do it the way Jesus wanted me to. I surrendered. I began to give the best and my first. I began to trust God with my money. And now here's all the things that I've seen God do since then. It could be an answered prayer. It could be a situation you were handling on your own. You know, there was a point in time I was not giving my marriage to Jesus. There was a time that we weren't doing our family God's way. And then we began to trust God's word. We began to trust Jesus with this. We began to pray. I wasn't praying about the situation, and I began to pray. And now this is where I see Jesus working in my life. Over and over and over in my life, I see the story of the gospel overlays with the life that I'm living, with the opportunities that God gives. And the same is true for you. at the end of the day, we come back to the bottom line we started with, that my story is a powerful one with my one. So here's what I want you to do on your handout that you got this morning, on your handout that you got. It's three simple sentences that you're just going to fill out as we begin to pray here in just a moment. And as we wrap this up and as we begin to pray, here's what I want you to know and I want you to do. I want you to finish those three simple sentences. Before Jesus, I was. And what's one word? If you were to tell your story to someone who had no idea who Jesus is, a neighbor, somebody who knows you, what was life before Jesus like? What was your world like before Jesus? And then you met Jesus. I met Jesus when, and that might take two or three words to finish. I met Jesus when someone introduced me to his saving grace. When I met Jesus when I was at the bottom of the barrel. I met Jesus when I was, you fill in that blank. And now, ever since Jesus, I am. And how is it different? It should be the opposite of the first sentence, right? And I want you to do this because this week, my prayer for every single one of us here, my prayer for every single one of you, Ball Road, is that you will have an opportunity to share the story. That there will be a chance for you to share the story that is a powerful story with your one. Now, here's how this you'll know is you'll be in a conversation with someone and God will begin to impress on you. Here's how you tell you, here's the time. They might say, why do you go to church? They might say, why do you take time on Sundays to do that? They might say, why do you give your tithes and offerings? That sounds crazy. They might say, how come you don't get angry like you used to? The question may come in various different ways. Hey, how do you have such faith in the face of uncertainty and things that you're not sure about? Always be prepared to give that story because your story is powerful with your one. So I want you to pray. I want you to bow your head and close your eyes for just a moment. And as we do this, I want you to begin to fill that out. What is your story? And maybe as you do this, you might realize I don't really have a story. I know a lot about Jesus, or I know some about Jesus. I know he was born on Christmas. I know he died, rose again on Easter. I believe God is real, but I don't know that I have a story. I don't know that I have a relationship with Jesus. Well, then before you can tell a story, you got to have a story. You got to have a story to tell. Maybe right now, if that's you, you would simply surrender your life to Jesus. Would you tell him that right now here across town? Would you tell him that right now? Jesus, I surrender my life to you. I give up total control to you. Ask him to forgive you. Ask him to change you. Ask him to rescue you. He died on a cross, paid a price he should not have paid for you so that you would have a story to tell, so that you would have a purpose in this life, so that you could be set free. It doesn't matter how bad you think you are, how far gone you think you are. You have a story to tell. You have an opportunity to make a difference in somebody's life. That's my prayer for you before we sing. Would you pray that with me? Lord, I pray right now all across this room as we complete just this simple little activity to be able to practice telling our story and telling our story. God, would you this week give every single one of us an opportunity to share with somebody who we were before Jesus, how we met you, and how we've been changed and rescued by you ever since then. Lord, maybe it applies to other parts of our lives. I didn't trust you with my health. I didn't trust you with my marriage, my family, my finances, my future, my career, my addiction, my temptation. That was before I gave it to you, Jesus. But then I gave it to you, Lord, when I hit rock bottom. I gave it to you when the tension got too heavy. I gave it to you when the crisis was at its height. And ever since giving it to you, Jesus, ever since surrendering to you, here's where we are now. Lord, give us a chance to share that story because we know your word tells us in Revelation 12 that that story is what overcomes the evil one. And it's not my story, it's your story, the story of Jesus. So Lord, help us to do that as we go. And we ask it in that name. Everybody said, amen. Let's stand and let's sing together before we go.